John Bogle, whose family struggles during the Great Depression led him to pioneer low-cost investing and to found Vanguard Group, now the world's biggest investment firm, died yesterday at the ripe young age of 89. Someone who credits Bogle with being one of the major sources of professional inspiration in his own quite remarkable career so far is Gareth Stobie, MD of CoreShares. Bogle's passing is a time for us to reflect on a real legend in the investment world. So thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Michael. And it's quite a privilege, actually, to have a moment to speak about him. I think Narina and I would be what they call Bogleheads. We're part of the club of people who have followed Bogle's career and what he stands for and have kept close to some of his investment philosophies and indeed the success of Vanguard and his legacy. We're talking about someone who really is considered by most in the finance profession as really one of the greats of our era, one of the greats of modern finance. He has really left quite a remarkable legacy for two reasons. As you say, he created the first index fund and is known as the father of indexing on the one hand. And also he's very remarkably driven down costs in the investment market. I saw a stat out today that in terms of Vanguard alone, the investment fees that they've saved investors through this low-cost structure amounts to something like $175 billion. So those are investment fees that would have ordinarily been paid by the man in the street that's been passed on to other savers.
And that is truly remarkable if you look at the global legacy that has left. If you look at the size of Vanguard's index funds. Narina, I just want to take the opportunity to intro the fellow Boglehead on the panel. Narina Fisser is on the line, ETF strategist and advisor at ETFSA, and does some fantastic work with the CFA Society here in South Africa. Narina, thanks for joining us.
It's absolutely a privilege, Michael. Thank you. And yes, as Gareth rightly says, you know, if being a Boglehead means that I have been inspired in my, not just in my career, but certainly in my personal life also, for the values for which he stood for. You know, he's famous for being the father of index funds, but he was so much more than that. And I think I really take a lot of inspiration from him, the way that he managed his career, but how he remained humble all along. You know, he wrote amazing books. One of my favorites of him is the book called Enough. And I think in a society where so much seems to be premised on greed and always wanting more and more and more, his notion that, you know, enough is actually enough is for me a wonderful hallmark almost of how one should and can live your life. And in a way that it is hugely rewarding. And when he passed away yesterday at the age of 89, I'm sure that he went to the next phase with a lot of joy and accomplishment in his life. And I think if that's what I can have out of my life, I'll also be happy.
Well, I think so far so good, Narina. Your value system really speaks to that value system of fighting for the little guy. A lot of his books really were about standing up for the little guy faced with the long odds and the hungry sort of shark or wolf of Wall Street type characters. With that said, Stobes, any of the many books that he wrote stand out for you?
Yeah, there's the one, I forget the name now, the simple book of investing, the little maroon book that we often distribute around CoreShares, Common Sense Investing, it's called. Really is a very simple, quick read for the man on the street. It's got 7-8 different lessons in there that he tries to impart on investing. And it's always about keeping things simple, not trying to be too clever as you approach the market, investing for the long term, staying the course, keeping costs low. That type of thing. That was really his philosophy. There really are. I think he's written about a dozen books. And that book on Common Sense Investing, I think it was into its 10th edition a couple of years ago.
And he might have been a Star Wars fan as well. Invest You Must. I think it was one of the timeless principles that has certainly stayed with me, in that it's not about timing the market. It's time in the market. So don't try and call the tops and the bottoms. Just get in there and let the power of compounding work its magic. And if you're doing it at a low cost, even better. Narina, looking back on how we actually came to be the father of index investing, and just looking at the size of Vanguard at the moment, I was absolutely bowled over doing a bit of digging this afternoon. The Vanguard 500 Index Fund has more than $440 billion in assets. That's $100 billion more than South Africa's GDP. That's just one fund. If you look at all of the assets, a $5 trillion assets under management business. It's a behemoth. But it started really on one principle back in the 1950s. How did he come to found this idea of index investing?
So I think his life story is also one of perseverance, because it all came out of the paper that he wrote as a student, I think it was at Princeton, in the 1950s, when he spoke about index, the power of indexing and how the average investor, I think he referred to it as the humble arithmetics, where once you actually look at all the forces in the market, the winners and the losers equal out and after costs, you cannot do better than the market. And he wrote this paper in the 1950s when he was a student, and nothing came of it. You know, it was so ahead of its time that it took another 20 years, in 1974, thinking about this and writing about it and the criticism and after said, but it's all good and well to talk about the index being the best way to invest, but you cannot invest in an index. And he then turned around and said, well, then maybe it's time that you should be able to invest in the index, and created the very first index fund. And you know, it was at the time, it was referred to colloquially as Bogle's folly, because Wall Street was pretty much looking at that and saying, oh, please, why would anyone want to be just average? Why would anyone want to be mediocre and invest in just the index? Of course, completely missing the point that after costs, your active style of management is not in a position to consistently outperform what is supposed to be the average. You know, the average of the market is what the index is, but the average of your investment funds that are available are in the region of about 80% of them that is below the average of the index, which is the market. But, you know, I stress to some extent, because I think the real, we know that Bogle was the father of indexing and indexation and index funds. But I think another lesser spoken about fact, which I think has really had as much of an impact on the investment industry, is the fact that the Vanguard Group is actually not a company. It is a mutual. It is a fund. And it is really, as far as I'm concerned, the only investment entity where you really get full alignment between the interests of the investors and the interests of the fund or the company, as it would normally otherwise be. Because any savings in terms of cost that were brought in terms of these index funds were there for the direct benefit of the investors. So as costs reduced, it just meant more returns for the investors, and therefore there was full alignment. And it was just wonderful. 2 years ago, I was privileged enough to meet John Bogle at the CFA conference in Philadelphia. He spoke there, and one of my favorite quotes from that time was when he was talking about the history of Vanguard, and he said, you know, when we started out, we certainly did not start out to create this behemoth and this massive investment company. He said, but you know what? I was too stupid to realize that if we gave people the best deal they've ever had, they're going to bring us lots and lots of money. I just love that, because it spoke to the humbleness of the man that never did this for fame or fortune or for money he did it because it was just fundamentally so morally the right thing to do.
And Stobes, through all of that, also battled his own health issues, as you mentioned to me off air, from a very young age as well. How much of that do you think perhaps drove his approach to investing?
Well, he was obviously a very successful guy right off the bat. I mean, Narina talks about him having gone to Princeton. I see he qualified summa cum laude and was just one of those hot shots sort of in the northeast of the US, and was sort of rocketed into sort of senior management and asset management quite early on in his life, which resulted in him having a heart attack when he was 31. And they at one stage didn't think that he was going to live till 40. But outside of that, it sounds like he was a very keen sportsman, tennis player and squash player and so forth. So I think he did live a healthy life outside of financial services, which ultimately enabled him to live to the ripe old age of 89.
But a man of very strong ethical principles and values, clearly, in an industry that through stories like The Wolf of Wall Street and others, is renowned for flashy lifestyles, fast cars, questionable personal decisions at senior management level.
Yeah.
And to buck the trend is quite unique.
He was an absolute maverick. I see there's even some Twitter feed going on today. There are a couple of fiduciary principles that they want to call the Bogle rule, and it's things around fiduciary responsibilities, and there's some aspects in there around financial planning as well, because it wasn't only about asset management. He also drove Vanguard to a more direct consumer model, where as an asset manager they would take direct money off the streets from individuals, which at the time was kind of not a done thing. It was all intermediated. He also broke the mold there as well. So there were a number of areas in asset management and through investments that he challenged. So the index, the one, the mutual model, the other, a couple of his distribution models were also quite unique. And he didn't like the sales room at Vanguard. You know, he felt that that's where bad ideas were sort of born. You know, he'd prefer it if it was an investment-led process, you know, in terms of doing right by the client and not trying to come up with the greatest sales fad.
It sounds like the tension in media between the editorial room and the sales team as well. Just one of his concluding thoughts and contributions to public discourse. And after he retired back in 1996, he remained really engaged to the very end. Narina, he sounded a warning back in November of last year. This is particularly about the US market, expressing concern that index funds may eventually own half of all US stocks. And to quote him, he says, "I do not believe that such concentration would serve the national interest." We're not anywhere near that in South Africa. Mm. But broadly speaking, might we reach a period where through index funds, we don't have enough of the market forces helping us discover prices and too much concentration?
Well, yeah. So Michael, I think there's two things at play that we need to consider. The first thing is when we talk about the size of the index market or the index funds, and if you were having it all concentrated in a single index, such as the S&P 500, then I share his concerns that that could be a problem. But of course, the index market and the ETF market and so on covers a vast array of not just indices, but also even asset classes. So we are now transcending beyond equity markets and stock markets when we start looking at other asset classes, bonds, listed property, commodities, these sort of things that come into it as well. So the flawed comparison is to look at the size of the index fund market and compare it to the market cap of, say, the New York Stock Exchange. Of course, index funds also span the globe, so there's a lot of other regions and geographies that are included in it as well. But even if you were to look at a situation where you're just looking at the concentration of funds that follow the S&P 500 index, and you were to compare that to the New York Stock Exchange, I think a very important factor in terms of appropriate price discovery comes down to what proportion of the daily trade can be attributable to the index funds versus to active traders. And I've seen some of the research that have been done that would indicate that even it's only at the point where index funds reach the point of around 90% of the assets under management or of the market cap, where you would see that a proportion of trade attributable to the index funds equal that of the trade attributable to the active funds. So I think for me, it's not about the sizes of the assets under management, but rather what proportion of trade and therefore price discovery comes from actively managed funds. And I think we are light years away from reaching those sort of proportions. And of course, at the end of the day, the less sort of efficient markets become because of this, the more an opportunity it creates for true active managers, and this will have a form of self-correction, is my belief.
I know one of the last things that he was also looking at and researching at, because he sort of ran this research center at Vanguard, was the concentration, not so much of passive, but of the big heavyweights in the passive world. So he was a bit concerned that Vanguard, State Street, and BlackRock, for instance, were owning so much of the stock market. He saw that as perhaps a bit unhealthy long term. When you look at governance and engagement models with companies, it's not necessarily healthy if big, you know, listed companies only have three or four big shareholders. You know, you want a diversity of shareholders, that there's lots of sort of participation in governance matters. So that was something that I know he was sort of intrigued with in more recent times.
And true to form leaves us thinking, us really analysing the industry, the state, where we find ourselves. And that really was a hallmark of the man's career. Stobes, thank you very much. Narina, to you too, and to the both of you for the work that you're doing to keep the Bogle vision, values and ethic alive here in South Africa. Really have enjoyed sharing and reminiscing some of the stories around Bogle with you two Bogle heads. Take care.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.